From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On this holiday edition of Fresh Air, for your listening pleasure, a concert and interview with songwriter, guitarist, and singer Dave Alvin, formerly of the Blasters and X. His latest solo album, King of California, features old and new originals. A concert with Dave Alvin coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Barbara Campbell. This is the first Labor Day without Major League Baseball since the holiday was established 100 years ago. The strike is in its 25th day, and Labor Secretary Robert Reich told NPR today that he's not sure a solution can be found soon.
I have to be cautiously pessimistic about the outcome of this strike. I've been working with both sides for a long time. We've made it clear that we're going to offer mediation. We've had mediators on call 24 hours a day. But until both sides want to resolve their dispute, I'm afraid it's going to be simply impossible.
Acting Commissioner Bud Selig says he'll probably cancel the rest of the season if there's no agreement by Friday. The main stumbling block is a salary cap that team owners say they need for the survival of the game. American military engineers in Panama are working around the clock to complete camps that will house thousands of Cuban refugees. U.S. officials say they're nearly ready to fly in the first group. Meanwhile, it's unlikely now that Panama will take in any of the refugees from Haiti. Tomas Cabal reports from Panama City.
According to Panama's foreign minister, the arrival of thousands of Cuban refugees will not allow the Panamanian government to offer safe haven to Haitians fleeing their impoverished homeland.
We offer the Haitians the same conditions that we're offering the Cubans. Unfortunately, the Cuban situation has taken all the capacity to house people in the military installation. Consequently, the United States is, I'm sure, is looking for assistance from other friends in the region for the Haitians.
Mr. Gabriel Luis Galindo explained that the housing of a total of 10,000 Cuban boat people on American military installations in the Panama Canal Zone for a period of 6 months was in response to a request from President Bill Clinton. For National Public Radio, this is Tomas Cabal in Panama City.
On this first day of the UN Population Conference in Cairo, Vice President Al Gore has tried to lay to rest claims by the Vatican and conservative Muslims that the U.S. is trying to pressure other countries to legalize abortion.
Let us take a false issue off the table. The United States does not seek to establish a new international right to abortion. And we do not believe that abortion should be encouraged as a method of family planning. We also believe that policymaking in these matters should be the province of each government within the context of its own laws and national circumstances.
Gore told the delegates from more than 100 countries that the world must resolve what he called the spiritual challenge to curbing population growth. This is National Public Radio News in Washington. A commander of an outlawed Protestant paramilitary group says loyalists are prepared to continue killing Roman Catholics in Northern Ireland because they don't have faith in the IRA ceasefire. The commander, who's a member of the Ulster Defense Association and who spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity, says Protestants trust neither the IRA nor the British government right now. A prisoner suspected of being the terrorist known as Carlos the Jackal has appeared again in a French court and has refused to answer questions about a Paris bomb attack 12 years ago. A woman died in the explosion, and Carlos is believed to be responsible for the deaths of another 80 people in a string of hijackings, bombings, and shootings over 2 decades. He was brought to Paris from Sudan by French agents 2 weeks ago. The BBC's Stephen Jessel reports.
Carlos met the examining magistrate, Jean-Louis Bruguière, briefly the day after he was flown back to France. But this was the first full questioning session, and Carlos was apparently in no mood to cooperate. He has in any case denied being involved in the bomb attack off the Champs-Élysées and claims he wasn't in Paris on the 22nd of April 1982 when it took place. Relatives of those killed and injured in incidents attributed to Carlos and his friends are becoming increasingly irritated, both by the transformation of Carlos into a media star and by the strategy of his defense team. This is to insist that French courts are not competent to try Carlos because it's claimed he was kidnapped and taken illegally from Sudan, while at the same time challenging the whole basis of the prosecution case.
Stephen Jessel in Paris. The latest exotic beer on its way to the U.S. is called 33. It comes from the Saigon Brewery in Vietnam, which says it has $1.5 million contract with an American importer. U.S. troops became familiar with 33 during the Vietnam War. The U.S. ended its trade embargo against Vietnam in February. I'm Barbara Campbell in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Whether or not you're already a Dave Alvin fan, I think you're going to enjoy the concert and interview we have on this holiday show. Rock critic Robert Christgau called Alvin a born songwriter and guitarist. Alvin writes songs that tell stories. His songs and his guitar playing draw on the blues, rockabilly, and country music. In the 80s, he played with the popular band The Blasters. He wrote most of the group's songs. His older brother Phil sang them. Dave Alvin left The Blasters in 86, briefly became the guitarist for the band X, and then started a solo career. Our concert was recorded in the early summer, just after the release of his fourth solo album called The King of California. The album features old and new songs by Alvin in a stripped-down acoustic setting. We invited him to bring his guitar, play some songs for us, and talk about his songwriting and guitar playing. Dave Alvin, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks for having me.
I want you to open with a song that you do on your new record called 4th of July. There's a history behind the song. Give us, like, the history of this song.
Well, it's based on a true story that took place in my hometown of Downey, California. But when I wrote it, I was kind of writing it as a goodbye song, you know, like the relationship's over, see you later. And when I recorded it with X and on my first solo album, that was kind of approached that way. But over, you know, over the, whatever, the 6 years or so, it kind of changed its meaning to me. Because sometimes when you write a song, you don't know really what you're writing. It just rhymes and it sounds good and it takes you someplace that maybe you don't understand, but you know it works. So over the years, it kind of changed its meaning, becoming... It went through a period of ambiguity, and now it's kind of like, it's almost a Let's Stay Together song now, so.
She's waiting for me when I get home from work. Oh, but things just ain't the same. She turns out the lights and she cries in the dark and won't answer when I call her name. And on the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican kids are shooting fireworks below. And hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. And hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. It's the 4th of July. She gives me her cheek. But I want her lips, and I don't have the strength to go on the lost side of town in a dark apartment. We gave up trying so long ago. On the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican kids are shooting fireworks below. And hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. Whatever happened, I apologize. Dry your tears and baby, walk outside. It's the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And on the stairs I smoke a cigarette alone. Mexican kids are shooting fireworks below. Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. Hey, baby, it's the 4th of July. We forgot all about the 4th of July. Hey,
Dave Elvin, that's a great song.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's very, very you to take what people consider to be a very celebratory holiday, exuberant holiday like the 4th of July, and write a really depressing, moody song about it.
Yeah, I got that knack, I guess. Yeah.
Do you think your songwriting has changed a lot since you left the Blasters and started writing songs for yourself?
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, the roots are still the same, and that's time and place and the musicians you're playing with. And when you're writing for another singer in a band, you're writing, you have to sort of write about shared things, shared experiences, shared emotions, and you get to a point where you run out, you know, or you get to a point where you're just tired of compromising because maybe one person sees the world a different way. And I realized at a certain point that I couldn't advance as a songwriter unless, you know, it sounds egotistical, and maybe it is, but I had to sing them. And I don't, you know, if other people want to sing them, that's great, and I'm all for it, you know, but there would be, like, no reason for me to write songs after a while if I didn't perform them, you know. I mean, in a way, I would love to be in a band. I would love to have that experience still, but on the other hand, it wouldn't work anymore.
And yet, although I know some of the songs are very personal and come out of your own experiences, yeah, like 4th of July, I figure some of them probably don't. You'd be in pretty bad shape if all these songs were autobiographical. There's a lot of songs about fugitives and, you know, people who have committed petty crimes and who are, you know, dirt poor all their lives. This can't be your typical daily experience.
Well, no, but you see things, you get an image, you'll just walk down the street and you see an image, or you think of people you've known. And my brother Phil and I grew up a little differently than a lot of other people. You know, on one hand, our father was a union organizer, so we spent a lot of our youth in the Southwest on organizing drives in copper towns and coal mining towns. And then later on in our life, when we were in our early teens, we followed around, you know, blues legends like, you know, T-Bone Walker and Big Joe Turner and Eddie Vincent. And all those things tend to rub off. And then, of course, when you're a teenager, well, I don't know about of course, but when we were teenagers, we had a tendency to to look for characters, let's put it that way. Something I, if you know, if I had kids, I probably wouldn't let them do. You know, I'd be
like
kind
what?
Of get away from them. Yeah, they're no good. I've done that. But you know, a song like "Guilty Man," for example, is a song about a guy that I knew. Growing up, when I was like 17, he was about 21, and destined for prison, which is where he wound up. But he had the sort of attitude that the song has was his attitude. And just one day, you know, write a song about it.
It's a great song. Can you do it for
sure.
us?
Sure. Well, the guy behind the counter didn't speak good English, but he understood the point of a gun. It wasn't no big deal, he just had some money, and at the time I didn't have none. When I walked in his store, half past midnight, I took what I could and I ran. So tonight the police are searching this city for one more guilty man. I think I'll go see this woman on my old side of town. I like to see her every now and again. And I'll say hi to her kids as she sends them to bed, 'cause her ex-husband's my best friend. And she won't ask no questions, she'll just smile when I lay some money in her hand. And for an hour or two she'll say she's in love with one more guilty man. You can blame my folks or the economy, blame my schooling, or you can blame me, I'm just what I am. One more guilty man. Well, I could say I got some kids and they got nothing to eat, and I got tired of hearing them cry. I could say anything that you wanted to hear, but it just might be a lie. Yeah, well, I could get a job, but I got my pride. I ain't working in no hamburger stand. So take a good look through the bars on your window for one more guilty man. You can blame my folks or the economy, blame my schooling, or you can blame me, I'm just what I am, one more guilty man. One more guilty man. One more guilty man. One more guilty man.
It's a wonderful song. That's Dave Alvin performing in our studio, and that song, Guilty Man, was recorded on his album, Blue Boulevard. He's got a new recording called King of California. You were talking about how this song was based on somebody who you knew when you were younger. What was your attitude toward him and the things that he'd done?
Well, you know, I guess mixed, you know, because you're attracted to the excitement and all that, and it's fun in a way, but on the other hand, you're going, well, I know this is wrong, but, you know, when you're a teenager, it's almost, which is when I knew this guy, you know, it's, you kind of don't know what to think in a lot of ways. I mean, I had pretty strong, you know, political, et cetera, beliefs, but right and wrong moral questions are definitely ambiguous. Maybe they still are for me. You know?
My guest is Dave Alvin, and he has a new album called King of California, and he's here performing some of his songs. And Dave, why don't we take a short break?
Sure.
And then we'll talk some more and hear some more music. This is Fresh Air. My guest is songwriter, guitarist, singer Dave Alvin. He has a new album called King of California, and he's playing some old and new songs for us today on Fresh Air. I want to talk a little bit about your guitar playing and the different guitar styles that you have. You have a very blues-oriented guitar style. How did you learn the blues? Did you learn it from records? Did you learn it from following your blues heroes?
Yeah, records and watching everyone from, you know, Reverend Gary Davis to Freddie King, you know, because we'd see, when we were little kids, we'd go and see those guys. But the actual sort of day in, day out, I would say I learned it from my brother Phil, who is a great sort of country blues guitar player. And I learned it from a guy named Gary Massey, who could play like T-Bone Walker and Jimmy Reed. So we'd go see T-Bone live, and then Gary could do it just down pat. And then I'd study their fingers, and I never really played guitar until we started the Blasters when I was in my early 20s. And we always had guitars in the house, and I played them, but I never played guitar, if you know what I mean. I never like said I was a guitar player or anything. And it'd be the kind of situation where guitar players would come over to the house and, you know, and they'd do something like a T-Bone, you know. Kind of thing. And then as soon as they'd leave, I'd like go pick up the guitar we had in our house and, you know, and that's kind of how I learned how to play guitar, you know. But yeah, I mean, there were certain guitar players like Johnny Guitar Watson and, you know, Chuck Berry, Guitar Slim, that, you know, or Elmore James, first time I heard him, that was it, you know. And I've got kind of a primitive style, and the one thing that's maybe good about it is, especially on electric guitar, when I'm playing electric guitar, you know it's me, you know, and because it's just kind of primitive, like I said. And those the guitar players I mentioned, like Johnny Guitar Watson, very physical, not sweet at all, just physical, you know. Kind of guitar playing, and it just stuck with me. So even like later on when, you know, like through the Blasters, but even when I was like in X, or I would get called to do, you know, sessions for various people's records, you know, like especially in X, I was really, because a lot of their music was, you know, the, and certain people couldn't understand that how I could fit in, but when I had a chance, I was always throwing in, you know. So it's just the way I play.
Did you impersonate any of your heroes before finding your own blues style? Your own?
Yeah, I impersonated, not quite impersonated, Chuck Berry and Carl Perkins, people like that. But I think my first real guitar hero was Lightnin' Hopkins, because when we were sneaking in the bars and going to the folk clubs and to the blues clubs and all that, I saw him about, my brother and I must have seen him around 53, 54 times. The number changes, but it's about that. And I just loved him. I just thought, you know, he'd get up on stage and it'd be nighttime and he'd have his sunglasses on. He'd have his hair slicked back and he'd be wearing like a sharkskin suit. And just the way his hands moved on the guitar was beautiful to watch. Nobody I've ever seen can do with his hands. I'm not talking what he's playing. I'm just talking about the way his hands moved on the guitar. Just fluid. They were almost as, it was as much a part of the song as the playing was, just to see the way he would take his thumb and go, of course, his radio. But he's always been an influence. So on the new album, I did an old Whistlin' Alex Moore song, who was a Texas piano player, blues piano player, blues songwriter, and did one of his songs, but I did it in the Lightnin' Hopkins style.
Why don't you do it for us?
You got it. Well, I met a woman in East Texas. She'd been left by herself alone. Well, I met a woman in East Texas. She'd been left by herself alone. And I was stranded out in the country where I was barely known. Fell for me and lonesome strangers standing in the drizzling rain. She fell for me and lonesome strangers standing in the drizzling rain. She said, "You can stay with me, baby, though I don't even know your name. Don't tell me you love me, 'cause to tell a lie is a sin. Just don't tell me you love me, 'cause to tell a lie is a sin." But you can lay down beside me, 'cause tonight I need a friend. I care for you, Daddy, but I don't love no man more than myself. She said, "I care for you, baby, but I don't love no man more than myself." But I got a mind to care and a heart to love like anyone has. Well, the wolves howl till midnight and the wild dogs moan for day. Well, the wolves howl till midnight and the wild dogs moan for day. But he didn't have a thing to say.
Dave Elvin, can you stick around with us for the second part of our show?
Sure.
That would be great. My guest is singer-songwriter guitarist Dave Elvin. He's got a new CD called King of California. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Coming up, we continue our concert and interview with Dave Alvin. After leaving the Blasters and X, he went out on his own. He's just released his fourth solo album. We're listening to the track I Won't Be Leaving.
When it's cold and it's raining, the midnight cars roll down the street. Street light shines in the gutter, and you've gone off to sleep. Baby, I sit up smoking, wipe the ashes off the bed.
From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Barbara Campbell. President Clinton marked Labor Day by visiting the Bath Iron Works in Bath, Maine today. He toured the facilities and gave a speech in the rain praising the workers' new contract, which gives them a say in determining the company's future as their military shipbuilding contracts dry up. The president told the workers that Americans in the workplace must be partners, not adversaries.
I believe we must do three things. We have to have an economy that works. We have to empower our people to succeed and win in that economy. And we've got to come together again as a community and work together. We cannot afford in a global economy to be divided again. Government and business and workers fighting each other all the time. People in this country finding ways to get in fights with each other instead of ways to pull together and make this country great again.
Also in the speech, the president called for striking baseball players and their teams to work out their differences and get back to work. The UN Conference on Population and Development has opened in Cairo with a clash over abortion. The European Union countries have suggested a way around it by rewording sections of the population control plan to be voted on at the gathering. They hope the Vatican, Muslim fundamentalists, and other critics will approve. A British government minister, Tony Baldry, says the statement will not advocate abortion. The BBC's Barnaby Mason reports.
The Vatican, backed by conservative Muslim opinion, objects to phrases such as reproductive health, fertility regulation, and safe motherhood on the grounds that they imply support for abortion. The European Union, which includes strongly Catholic countries like Ireland, wants to make it clear that they don't mean that. Mr. Baldry said Union members had reached an agreed position on chapters 7 and 8, which deal with reproductive health care and family planning. A section would be placed at the top of Chapter 7, stressing that every nation had the sovereign right to make its own population policies. He said the international community wanted to make the text say clearly that every effort should be made to eliminate abortion and that it would not be promoted as a method of family planning.
Barnaby Mason in Cairo. The U.S. Coast Guard warned Cuban Americans today not to attempt to smuggle friends and relatives out of Cuba. The Coast Guard says it's looking carefully at fishing and pleasure boats off Florida for signs of rescue missions. Those indications might be extra fuel, food, life jackets, and clean clothes. The Coast Guard says that trying to smuggle people in is illegal, and it hampers efforts to rescue refugees who are setting out on their own from Cuba. The Coast Guard arrested 5 Miami men in 2 boats yesterday as they attempted to smuggle some 60 Cubans into Florida. The Navy says the hospital ship Comfort is headed for Guantanamo Naval Base to help. This is NPR. President Clinton said today that he's optimistic that health care reform will be enacted this year. Reform measures have been stalled in Congress. A new Labor Department study shows health care reform has strong backing from working women. Karen Nussbaum is director of the department's Women's Bureau, which conducted the survey. She says health care is just one of many topics working women would bring up with the president if they had the opportunity to talk to him.
We hear about health care very often. We hear about women being just plain tired. We hear about the need for some kind of child care system in this country. And we hear about the persistence of unequal pay or just plain not enough pay.
Nussbaum has been meeting with women around the country to hear about women's job concerns. Census data show that 9 million women who work for pay have no health insurance of any kind. An Australian politician has been shot and killed outside his home in suburban Sydney. John Newman was a Labor member of the State Parliament of New South Wales. He was known as a critic of Asian crime gangs and a campaigner for better conditions for immigrants detained in Australia. Police say he seems to have been shot from a moving car. The German state of Bavaria rejected demands for more money today from the families of Israeli athletes killed at the 1992 Olympics, or rather than the 1972 Olympics. Relatives are renewing claims that police documents show that the athletes were shot by the German police trying to free them, not by the terrorists who had taken them hostage. The Bavarian government says authorities committed no mistakes that make the state liable for damages. It adds that the police risked their own lives trying to save the athletes. The German government paid relatives $1 million compensation after the incident. I'm Barbara Campbell, NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Dave Alvin. We asked him to stay for the second part of our show to play more of his old and new songs. Dave Alvin started off in the band The Blasters, co-founded with his brother Phil, then briefly played guitar in the band X. He's been on his own since 1986. He's just released his fourth solo album called The King of California. In the first part of the show, he talked about the influence of the blues on his playing and songwriting. I asked him if he ever went through a period of feeling uncomfortable about being a white person playing the blues.
I don't really have a problem with it because I'm not trying to do cotton field songs. I'm not trying to do I was born in Chicago kind of songs. The one thing I learned early on from following the blues guys around was that I had to write my own blues. And it's probably the reason why it took me so long to write songs was I hadn't lived enough yet to start writing songs. I mean, Mose Allison is a great blues singer, great blues songwriter. You know, Bob Dylan's a great blues singer and a great blues songwriter. Hank Williams was a great blues singer, great, you know, blues songwriter. And so I don't think it's white people can't, but I think you have to have a certain understanding of where the music's coming from. You know, a lot of, say, the white performers try to take it out of its political social context and strip it of that meaning. And that meaning's very important in the blues, you know, especially in the black blues. And it sanitizes it and makes it, you know, it makes it like the beer commercial music, you know, that you hear on, you know, for cars or beer commercials on TV. And to me, that's really sad because that strips a lot of the dignity and a lot of the ambiguity and a lot of the majesty and a lot of the terror and a lot of the sadness and a lot of the, God, character out of the blues and out of R&B. And it just kind of breaks my heart at times because I think about little kids. When I was a little kid and I would hear Howlin' Wolf for the first time, I heard him on the border radio stations coming across from Mexico. And it was at night and it was scary and it was wonderful and it was liberating. And I wanted to know more about it. And I think when, you know, a kid, say, 8 years old today, hears blues or R&B for the first time or even country music, he's hearing it on commercials. And I wish there was a law. I think we should make an amendment to the Constitution that all commercials had to sound like they did in the 50s. It'd be little jingles that were just corny.
Yeah,
you know, and that way it would be this whole other genre and we could keep everything else pure. You know, I mean, people say that about, you know, Beatles songs being used for Nike ads or something, but
you feel that way about the Muddy Waters ads?
I feel that way about, yeah. I think it's great for the musicians, you know, and to be, not to be a hypocrite, I've done a couple sessions where I've done that because it helps pay the rent. But it is the catch-22 of, you know, it's, you know, musicians have to survive. They have to eat. They have to do this, you know, for a living. But on the other hand, you know, these days especially, it's just like we want to strip everything of its meaning.
It sounds like there was maybe a period of limbo for you when you were learning blues styles of other people, but you hadn't yet found a way to make those styles your own, to use that style in your own kind of songwriting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you ask certain, like, blues purists, does Dave Alvin play blues? I'll say no. You know, no, not at all. I mean, the same thing if you ask a country purist, does he play country? No. He's a rock and roll guy, you know, whatever. But to me, a song like, say, Long White Cadillac, which was a hit for Dwight Yoakam, I was basically writing kind of a secular song for the Swan Silvertones, was what I was thinking, like a blues song for a gospel group to sing. Don't ask me how that works, but I was trying to put it into things that I felt and things that I had seen. And because of that, I don't want to feel restricted into writing any set blues, you know. You know, first line repeated twice and answered on the third kind of pattern. Because to me, the blues is so integrated into American music. I mean, it's the bedrock. It's everywhere. It's from country to jazz to rock and roll to, you know, whatever. That if I play a country song, it's a blues song. Mm-hmm. You know, is the way I view it.
I think
Ray Charles has the same attitude. You know, so.
So was Long White Cadillac an important song in you creating a style for yourself?
I think Border Radio was maybe the most. That was the first one where I said, okay, here's something that is only in a certain area in the Southwest. You know, do people really know about it? And it was written about a woman that I kind of knew. And when I wrote that, I was like, hey, I think we might be on the right track here. Because the few songs I wrote before it, you know, not that they were bad, but they were just, I was feeling myself, you know, in the dark, kind of like trying to figure out how to view my world from you know, one, that's all the American music tradition, and also from the southeast side of Los Angeles.
You've re-recorded Border Radio on your new album, and the new album's called King of California. Would you do a few lines of that for us?
Sure. So one more midnight and her man is still gone. The night moves too slow and she tries to remember the heat of his touch while listening to the border radio. And this song comes from 1962, dedicated to a man who's gone. 50,000 watts out of Mexico. This is the border radio. This is the border radio. So that's even though it's not to me that's a blues song.
Yeah, it's a great song. Dave Alvin is my guest. We're going to take a short break, then we'll be back. This is Fresh Air. Featuring a concert and interview with songwriter, guitarist, and singer Dave Alvin.
There's a song of yours called Bus Station.
Yeah.
That I'd really like you to do, and this is one of the songs on the new album. And could you talk about this song? Seeing what elements it brings together of what we've been talking about, the different styles of guitar playing and your approach to singing and songwriting.
Well, the guitar playing's pretty rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
The style of singing is pretty direct, I would say. You know, I'm not. It's not like it's a showstopper number. You know, you're not. Liza Minnelli's not going to cut this one. But
don't give up hope.
Yeah. but the lyrics. This was. If Border Radio was the song that kind of told me that I was on the right track, this was the song that told me I could write songs. Everything else, you know, like I said, had been kind of flukish, you know. I didn't know how to go and access it, you know. It would have to hit. And we were working on the second Blaster record, and I took 2.5 months off from everything. The only bad habit I kept was cigarette smoking. I didn't drink, didn't go out at night, and I sat in a room scared trying to write songs. And when I finished this one, I was like, I can write a song. I can do it. Because this one was sculpted. And it came from a real-life experience, and it was sculpting it down to just the right words and the right everything to fit the mood. And once I did it, then I was like, I kind of walked out of the room and just felt like, I'm a songwriter now. You know, even though I'd already had the international hit by someone else and all that, I walked out with maybe one of my more uncommercial songs I've ever written, but it's just, that's why it's on the record. It's my song. Bus station, sunup, looking for a new place to go. He sips his coke and he pulls his ring and thinks of how she looked years ago. And she curls up in a blanket in a yellow plastic seat. Stares out the window at an empty morning street. Well, he must have had a screw loose in his head, end up like this after all he said. He lies to her, she kisses him, getting tired of love. Station at sunup, she reads the ticket in her hand. It's a different name for the same old town. This ain't the life that they had planned. So he tries to tell her it won't be like the times before. Different town and a brand new start, and he's gonna work a little bit more. Well, he must have had a screw loose in his head to end up like this after all he said. He lies to her, she kisses him, getting tired of love. Station at sunup, there's another hour left to blow. He touches her and she'd like to leave, but there's no place left to go. She must have had a screw loose in her head. How could she believe everything he said? Lies to her, she kisses him, getting tired of love, getting tired of love, getting tired of love.
That is a great song. And that's the kind of song I can imagine. I won't name names, but I can imagine a lot of people singing that song, including country singers.
Well, you know, maybe in the 70s, because there was kind of a strain there for a while with Billy Joe Shavers and Waylon and people like that that were writing pretty real songs. And a lot of the stuff today is more kind of positive.
I know exactly what you mean. And songs like about how great country music is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this would, like I said, it's not a showstopper. You know, and everything these days is a showstopper.
It's a great song.
Thanks.
How come you didn't call it Tired of Love or Getting Tired of Love?
Oh, because it's a song about a bus station. No, it's just a better title, you know. I mean, Tired of Love is kind of...
Makes it more corny?
Well, you know... Bus station is more intriguing. Like, gee, what could this possibly be about? Uh-huh. Tired of Love. Oh, he's got a song about being tired of love.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just more of it's a picture of a bus station, you know, as well as their relationship, you know. It's like, the bus station's like this waiting area, you know, and they're kind of in that waiting area of life. Oh boy, that's corny. That was corny. Stick to songs, but you know what I mean, though. You know.
My guest is Dave Alvin. He has a new album called King of California. More music in a minute. This is Fresh Air.
I'm Linda Wertheimer. Later today on All Things Considered, we will have a report from Cuba. Tom Gelton is visiting there and will be reporting on the efforts to halt the immigration from Cuba to the United States. We'll also have a report on immigration from Europe, Andy Bowers, on why France is trying to shut down the flow of immigrants to that country, and conservatives in France who are concerned that it will change the character of their country. We'll have a news report from Cairo on what is happening with the population conference there, and we'll be continuing with our series on population, this time with a report from India. And Barbara Mantell on this Labor Day will be talking to temporary workers. That's all later today on All Things Considered from National Public Radio.
My guest is songwriter, guitarist, and singer Dave Alvin. Often when we do concerts on Fresh Air, I like to ask the songwriter to do a song that they didn't write, but that they really love, but would seem out of character for them to love. A song that we'd be surprised that you love.
Oh, boy.
So surprise us.
Okay, let me tune. Let's see. With my voice, if I sing anything, it's kind of... kind of a surprise if I sing anybody else's songs, but I'll play a song that I love. It's a Curtis Mayfield, Jerry Butler song, and I guess maybe that's not too shocking, I guess. But maybe this one would be, I don't know. He don't want to love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. And he don't love you like I love you. And he's trying to tear us apart. Fare thee well, I know you're leaving with that new love that you found, that handsome guy you've been dating. I got the feeling he's gonna put you down. He don't love you like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. He don't love you like I love you. He's trying to tear us apart. He uses all the great quotations. He says the words I wish I could say. But he's had so many rehearsals. Baby, to him it's just another play. But wait. When the final act is over and you're left standing all alone, when he takes his bow and makes his exit, well, baby, I'll be there to take you home. Cause he don't love you
like I love you. If he did, he would break your heart. He don't love you like I love you. He's trying to tear us apart.
I don't know how much of a surprise that is, but we could do another one.
Well, that sounded great. I mean, it's a soul song done in a different kind of way. Dave Alvin, this has really been wonderful.
Well,
thank you so much for being here and for playing some of your songs for us. It's been great.
Thanks for having me.
Dave Alvin's latest record is called The King of California. Our concert was recorded in June. Our program was produced today by Roberta Shorrock. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, and Naomi Person, with Sue Spolin and Kathy Wolfe. I'm Terry Gross. Let's go out with a song called Goodbye Again from The King of California. It's a duet with Rosie Flores, who co-wrote the song with Dave Alvin. Have a good holiday.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations. Additional support comes from the George Gund Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Privatopia. We talk with Evan McKenzie about the social and political impact of private walled communities with their own governments, police protection, garbage pickup, street maintenance, and their own rules of conduct. McKenzie says they're the fastest growing form of new housing. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.